Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the recent emergence of racist remarks from the Romney campaign and assess the legacy of the GOP's Southern strategy and whether the overt and irrational hatred of President Obama, often expressed by Tea Party Republicans, is becoming more or less acceptable. Colin Powell's former Chief of Staff, Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson, joins us to discuss Republican criticism of Colin Powell's endorsement of President Obama that suggested Powell's choice was based on race, not the reasons he enunciated. Then, following a recent poll by the Associated Press that indicated racial attitudes have not improved since America elected its first black president, we'll continue to look into race as a factor in this election. Andra Gillespie, a professor of political science at Emory University, joins us to discuss how many Americans are hardwired with racial resentment that politicians can exploit in a highly polarized society undergoing economic distress. Then finally, we'll examine the fallout from the New York Times investigation of the wealth accrued by the family of China's outgoing leader, Wen Jiabao. China expert Perry Link joins us. He has been following the behind-the-scenes succession struggle going on within the Chinese Communist Party Politburo that indicates the normally bland leadership transition is deadlocked in intra-party wrangling over power, privilege, and profit. Joining us now is Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson, a retired United States Army colonel and former chief of staff to United States Secretary of State Colin Powell. In 2005, Colonel Wilkerson went public with his knowledge that Vice President Cheney had provided the guidance that led to America's torture disgrace in Guantanamo, Abu Ghraib, and elsewhere. Currently, he teaches courses at the College of William & Mary and George Washington University. Welcome to Background Briefing, Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson.
Thanks for having me on, Ian.
And your remarks on MSNBC the other night certainly got a lot of attention, certainly got my attention. Of course, these remarks in response to the endorsement for a second term of President Barack Obama by former Secretary of State Colin Powell. John Sununu is not the only person who was critical. John McCain said that, insisted that this endorsement, that by giving this endorsement, Colin Powell was harming his legacy. Who do you think is listening to this? Is this dog whistle politics, or is this a indication of America's fall from grace in terms of polity?
Ian, I think it was George Orwell who wrote that in a time of universal deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. I've gotten a lot of emails over my time speaking about the things that I have spoken about since I left the Bush administration in January of 2005, but I have been overwhelmed in the last 20 hours. I've never seen such a volume of emails. 90% of them are running basically positive. The 10% that aren't come mostly from Republicans, and I'm very sad to say, probably demonstrate graphically that what I said was accurate. This is something that both academically, as you pointed out in your introductory remarks, we all know about the bargain with the devil that Nixon made to attract Dixiecrats away from the Democratic Party and to the Republican Party during times when Dixiecrats were angry over desegregation, anger over busing, and so forth and so on. But this really even has stunned me in terms of what I uncovered, apparently, though there's no way to check party affiliation on these emails, but from the narratives, what I've uncovered in the Republican Party in terms of the angst and the vehemence with which I'm being denounced. I'm being told I'm a member of the Ku Klux Klan. I'm being told that I don't understand what Democrats have done to African Americans by welfare programs. You name it, I'm being accused of it, and usually in less than gentlemanly language.
Well, specifically what you said on MSNBC the other night on Ed get your cell phones out, Schulz's program. Just quoting you, my party, unfortunately, is the bastion of those people, not all of them, but most of them, who are still basing their positions on race. Let me just be candid. My party is full of racists, and the real reason a considerable portion of my party wants President Obama out of the White House has nothing to do with the content of his character, nothing to do with his competence as commander-in-chief and president, and everything to do with the color of his skin, and that's despicable. So,
I stand by those remarks.
Well, I think they resonate with an awful lot of people. I mean, I guess the question is, do they resonate with the majority or the minority? Are we in a post-racial society or not? I mean,
That's a very interesting question, particularly since I think many of these people, Rush Limbaugh and Glenn Beck, stand at the peak of these people who are hiding what is their true problem with their republic right now, and that is that they know conclusively, all you have to do is look at the demographics, that they will be in the minority very shortly. In fact, if you combine Asians, blacks, and Hispanics and other than Caucasians, lily whites, right now they're in the minority. And this scares the bejesus out of them. And if it's Hispanics and blacks becoming brown, in other words, we could say in color terms, becoming the majority in this country, they're absolutely apoplectic about that because they think it's the end of the republic.
So what is happening, Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson, again, retired U.S. Army Colonel, former Chief of Staff to the United States Secretary of State Colin Powell. The Sununu, John Sununu, is a principal surrogate for Mitt Romney. So the real question, I think, is the extent to which they coordinate their remarks. It's hardly seemed an accident that this would come out. You know, in elections, one misstep can cost a candidate the entire ball game, and they are very, very careful, and they're careful about what they say. And when they say things that usually are inflammatory, it's deliberate. Quite often the remarks are designed to elicit publicity. So two questions here about Sununu. Do you think it was an off-the-cuff mistake on his part, or two, was it deliberate and therefore coordinated presumably with the campaign?
Initially, I thought it was a sacrifice bunt, Ian, for the very reasons you just described. Powell had endorsed. They needed to deflate that, so they drug out John Sununu, who would have been the last person I would have drug out because John has a way of letting his rear end overload his mouth. But they drug him out to hit a sacrifice bunt. And that's all I thought it was, especially as he came back and tried to more or less explain his remarks. But then I started hearing other remarks he had made over time and at that time. And once I heard those remarks, I realized that it was probably more than just him hitting a sacrifice bunt. Indeed, he was expressing, however ambiguously or inchoately, some of the feelings that I'm now describing to the American people that exist inside the Republican Party. As I said, they exist across the country. We have not done away with racism and intolerance and bigotry and hatred in this country. To that end, part of the angst within my party is also about President Obama's stand on gays and lesbians. They abominate that stance. Their posture towards that stance reminds me of the posture, some of which still exists, but in its original days was really bloody, against abortion and against Roe v. Wade. These two things combined, gays, abortion, or three things actually, gays and recognizing them, abortion and racism, make a very powerful and potent poison within the ranks of all of us, but certainly within the ranks of the political party that I'm a member of.
So when you mentioned, Colonel Wilkerson, that you looked into earlier remarks of John Sununu's that are consistent with what he said the other day about Colin Powell essentially endorsing President Obama because they both are black, as opposed to the reasons that Powell enunciated. And in fact, I'd like to go into those reasons because I think that's what's being missed in this whole thing. And perhaps that's the whole point. So the people don't actually listen to what Powell said. They get sort of.
No, you're right. You're right. I think that's their political maneuver, is to deflate and de-energize, if you will, what he said, what his endorsement meant.
So the remarks that come to mind that recently after the first debate, John Sununu called the president lazy in his lackluster performance against Romney. And he also earlier in July said...
Where in our history, if you know anything about the 400-year history, and it is 400 years, it goes back well into colonial times, where have you heard that term used before?
Right.
It fell off the lips of every racist in America. That is the 150-year, at least, characterization of blacks in America, quote, lazy, unquote.
And, of course, it's hard to believe that could be, talk about an irony. I mean, this is the legacy of slavery. The African Americans are the ones that actually did the work, wasn't it? I mean,
Isn't that ironic?
Right.
We even have a new history coming out, prefaced in Smithsonian Magazine, this latest issue, looking at one of my heroes, looking at a person who is very, very dear to the College of William and Mary, Thomas Jefferson. And we find in this new revisionist history, and it's indisputable that the archives have been consulted correctly, that he, later in his life, when he realized the interest-bearing rate of black slavery, that is to say that it was a win-win all around. You not only made money off their labor on the plantation, you also made money off their procreation and selling them. And so it was a completely, completely profit-filled operation. And Jefferson's the one that formulated the mathematics behind expressing this free interest rate economic system, which many have said, and I agree with them looking at the facts, that next to northern manufacturing, southern slavery was the second most important element in building the powerful economy that the United States eventually became. So we built this country on the backs of northern manufacturing and southern slavery.
And
lazy?
Exactly. I mean, it's interesting, actually, one of the founding fathers, in fact, he refused to sign the Declaration of Independence, George Mason, who was in many ways the intellectual mentor of both Jefferson and George Washington. He had the biggest library in the New World and was very, very well-read man. He refused to sign the Declaration of Independence because he believed that they were trying to finesse around slavery and that it would come back to bite them. And he essentially predicted the Civil War.
He was absolutely right. It came back to bite them in the form of 600,000 dead Americans and over 1 million casualties.
So the other remark, of course, from Sununu was that back in July, I wish the president would learn to be an American. And that goes back, of course, to Sarah Palin in the 2008 election. It's a tiresome and divisive tactic to split Americans between real and, presumably, unreal Americans.
Well, here, though, Ian, is the essence of the intellectual, not the intolerance, not the bigotry, not the prejudice. This is the core of the intellectual argument. My party has leaders within it and a rank and file following those leaders that thinks that America was created by wealthy people and that the only way we can meet the future, indeed meet the present, is to have wealthy people who amass zillions of dollars and then somehow pennies from those dollars trickle down to the rest of us. That's their economic interpretation, and when they see a person who doesn't necessarily believe the way they do, like President Obama, or for that matter, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt, pick almost anyone in the 20th century who wore the Democratic garb, they're scared to death of them, because what they're really mounting in is a defense of their wealth. They're not mounting a defense of the republic, a defense of the country, a defense of values or our way of life. They're mounting a defense of their wealth, which increasingly looks a lot to those of us who deal in these sorts of things every day in the academic world to be an oligarchy and not a republic.
Well, I suppose in a way it's the country started out as a democracy, the rule of those with property, and that was modified, and democracy is something that's been fought for and evolved over the centuries. But we've had these oligarchical periods, and it's interesting to note that your party, the Republican Party, the party of Lincoln, is effectively run by Karl Rove, whose mentor, as he is himself has expressed on a number of occasions, is Mark Hanna, the man behind the scenes that brought about the McKinley election during the first Gilded Age.
And then had the awful shock of an assassin's bullet that put their worst nightmare in the White House. They thought they'd sidelined him as vice president and they'd never have to deal with him again. He was in a job that, as John Garner said, was not worth warm spit. And then all of a sudden, an assassin's bullet took out McKinley, and we had Theodore Roosevelt, and he began to wage war on the robber barons and the predatory capitalists.
So when you
would that we had such an occasion today in the Republican Party.
Well, it does seem, Colonel Wilkerson, that not only are we entering a period where our very democracy is in question, and whether or not it's become an oligarchy in our economy, whether or not it's become a plutonomy, and that our politics have been captured by money and by those with money. One of the things that I find that's emerging now is to add to this dystopian picture, albeit an accurate one, is this new feudalism where you have the people like the Koch brothers who own Dixie Cups and all these companies like Georgia Pacific, who are sending out missives to their employees, essentially intimidating and blackmailing them into voting for Romney, suggesting if they don't vote for Romney, they will lose their jobs. And one of them, the CEO of Rightheight, Mark White, has said that the employers might suffer personal consequences if they vote for Obama. I find that kind of feudal.
It is feudal. And again, it's part of this wealth defense. It's the way predatory capitalists marshal their forces around what power they do have. And, of course, the Supreme Court decision, Citizens United, enhanced that power majorly, in my view. To argue, as my Republican colleagues do, that it just balanced corporate power with union power is risible. It makes me want to laugh. Union power is dwindling so badly in this country that one looks around for any vestige of it remaining. So this has created a situation where people like the Koch brothers, both through that decision by the Supreme Court and methods that you just described, are running this country. And there's another fright out there right now, and that's the fact that we have states who are going to participate in this national election that have no way to conduct a recount. No way whatsoever. Because they've so committed, for financial reasons, their political process, their election process, their ballot counting process, to computer data processing systems, that there is no way whatsoever to have a recount. And we're going to have some close votes. And we're going to have some computer hacking, I would predict. And we're going to have some things like we had in 2004 in Ohio, where I'm quite confident, I can't prove it, I wish I could, that George W. Bush's people, led by Karl Rove, did some hanky-panky in Ohio with the computer data processing systems. We've got a real problem in this country. It's pitiful that we should be the ones begging the world to send election observers to our elections, because our elections have the potential to be as corrupt as anybody's in the world.
And of course, when they get to within 1 or 2%, that's when trickery, a la Karl Rove, can be employed.
Yes.
I mean, of course, the irony is Kerry has the real results come out, and I think there's a lot of evidence that that the election was stolen by both Karl Rove and Secretary of State of Ohio Kenneth Blackwell. Had the Kerry won fair and square, as he apparently did, it would have been a difficult for him to become president under the Electoral College with a deficit of 2.4 million in the popular vote. There's some suspicion or some expectation that we may even get down to a division, even a 50-50 split in the Electoral College.
I could see it, and I could see that 50-50, at least 2 or 3 percentage points of its coming into being done by people playing around with the election process.
So the answer to that would, I suppose, be that the Democrats had better wake up and come out in droves to overcome that percentage.
I said to someone the other day, I said, as has happened so many times in our history over the past, let's just hope the corruption on the one side counterbalances the corruption on the other side. Otherwise, we're not going to have a fair election.
Well, just in closing, Colonel Wilkerson, let's return to Colin Powell's endorsement of President Obama for a second term and what he really said, which, of course, was obfuscated by a deliberate, it looks like a deliberate injection of racism in the remarks of John Sununu that perhaps distracted a lot of people from the very important point that Powell was making, which, by the way, the president himself did not make in his debate with the third and final debate on foreign policy with Romney. He pulled back from saying what I think he should have said, which is that Romney's campaign, Romney, of course, was trying to suggest he had the same foreign policy as Obama. But if Obama had mentioned who's advising Romney in terms of his foreign policy, he could have much more effectively tied Romney's foreign policy to George W. Bush. So it took Colin Powell to do that.
Well, this is my principal concern, and I won't speak for Powell. He spoke well enough for himself, but I know these people. I've seen them work, and I am looking at the same sheet of music being developed and sung from right now that I looked at in 2002 and 2003, to my eternal shame, and I don't like what I'm seeing. I'm seeing the same people marching us down an inevitable war in Western Asia, this time with Iran, that I saw do it with Iraq in 2002 and 3. And this is very disturbing. I think a war with Iran, as Secretary Gates said in Norfolk the other day, former Secretary of Defense Robert Gates, would be catastrophic.
And this is the neoconservatives who dominate Romney's foreign policy advisors.
Some of the same people that dominated George W. Bush. And we're looking at a first term for Mitt Romney being one of, we have to face it, an inexperienced individual in the Oval Office. And that's the same thing we have with George W. Bush. I would argue his second term was somewhat better than his first. In his first term, he was influenced to a maximum degree by these neoconservatives, led by Don Rumsfeld and Dick Cheney. We don't need another president learning the ropes in this most dangerous time with these people hanging on to those ropes. I think that's the principal reason that I'm going to pull the lever for President Obama on November the 6th.
Well, Colonel Wilkerson, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thanks for having me, Ian.
Again, I've been speaking with Lawrence Wilkerson, a retired United States Army colonel and former chief of staff to United States Secretary of State Colin Powell. In 2005, Colonel Wilkerson went public with his knowledge that Vice President Cheney had provided the guidance that led to America's torture disgrace at Guantanamo, Abu Ghraib, and elsewhere. Currently, he teaches courses at the College of William & Mary and George Washington University. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back talking about racism in this election.
In a little tent, oh, and just like the river, I've been around. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come.